Hei, kjære lytter, og velkommen til ny episode av Namaste. Dette en podcast om yoga, meditasjon og holistisk livsstil. I denne podcasten så møter jeg ulike mennesker som skal inspirere oss, enten med sine fine historier om hvordan de har brukt yoga i livet, eller med sin kunnskap som vi kan lære av. Ayurveda nært beslektet med yoga, og et tema som jeg alltid har hatt lyst til å lære mer om. Dagens gjest, hun møtte jeg gjennom yogamiljøet. Hun yogalærer, og tydeligvis en som har latt seg fascinere ekstra mye av denne gamle tradisjonen. For nå kommer hun med bok om Ayurveda, og da måtte jeg selvfølgelig invitere henne hit til meg. Jessica Windern, hun opprinnelig fra USA, så dette intervjuet blir derfor på engelsk. Men boka hennes allerede oversatt til norsk, så det en av de som liker å lese bøker helst på norsk, så det bare å glede seg til det. Men boka skal vi snart komme tilbake til. Først så må jeg få ønske Jessica velkommen. So, welcome Jessica.
Thank you so much, Vivica. I am really excited to be here and talk about Ayurveda and life.
Thank you for taking the trip to Oslo for the occasion.
Yes, yes. I just drove here from Hemsedal, so I am ready to talk about yoga.
Good. And you came without the jacket and... Yes, it's a warm spring day, but I'm not sure if it...
yeah, well, and what's really funny about that is everybody who knows me knows that I'm always the cold friend. So I'm always the one with the jacket and the hat and the gloves. And so it's just a strange thing. I got fooled by the sunshine today.
Exactly. So I was like, okay, well, it's nice and warm here inside. First of all, did I say your surname right?
You did. Yeah, Windern. Yeah.
Windern.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's kind of like rocks in the mouth a little bit.
Exactly.
It's hard to say.
I was like practicing and then I was a little bit unsure if it was the right pronunciation.
You got it. Even my husband sometimes struggles.
Exactly. Okay, that's good to hear. And so I told you, bear with me with my English. You know, it's not my first language. And I might say some... words wrong, but then you can correct me, I guess.
It's all good. I really appreciate you speaking in English and inviting me on the podcast to do it in English. So it's all good.
Good, good, good. So why don't you start by introducing yourself? You know, we met some years ago.
Yeah, pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, exactly. We were teaching together at Yoga Weekend at the ILO. But I don't really know much about you, so I'm so curious. Can you tell us, who are you?
I'll try. I'm Jessica, and I'm American. I grew up in the U.S., and I was really, I would say, a ski bum for a long time and bounced around ski towns in the western U.S. for a long time. And kind of came into yoga and Ayurveda in my mid-20s when I was sort of having a bit of I could say an identity crisis, or I like to say a spiritual crisis, where it's, you know, a very confusing time, and I wasn't sure what I was doing with my life, and I was working in a law firm and had gone and gotten extra education after my undergrad in the legal field, and I was like, oh, my heart is calling me somewhere else, and in this realm of spirituality and self-inquiry and yoga, and I want to just be free, like when I ski on the mountains. And then yet I was told, no, you have to get a real job and have a career and work in the corporate industry. And so I was really struggling. And that's when I found yoga and my life changed, like almost literally overnight. And after that, I moved to a little ski town in Utah called Park City, outside of Salt Lake City, where we had the Winter Olympics. And
I was there.
You were there.
Yes.
Oh, cool. Yes.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know exactly where I was. And then, you know, I guess cutting to the chase, after I really sort of devoted my life to yoga and teaching yoga and started my yoga school, I was on a ski trip, surprise, and randomly met a very handsome young man in a ski gondola in Switzerland. And that man was Norwegian, and we are just about to celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary. So moved to Norway about almost 7 years ago after we lived together in the U.S., and I moved my yoga business here and am just teaching yoga and doing what I did in the U.S., but now here in Norway. And
wow,
that's the short story, I guess.
That was a lot in a short story.
Yeah.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So, but how did you find yoga? I mean, when you said you had like a spiritual crisis, identity crisis, but why yoga?
I had a friend of mine at the time, and she was also a ski bum. We were both ski instructors in Aspen, and she was teaching yoga, and we would have these amazing, like, philosophical conversations and talking about life and the way in which we view the world and how we wanted to show up in the world. And she just kind of looked at me one day and was like, Jessica, you're talking about yoga. And it was funny because my mother had done yoga forever. My aunt is a yoga teacher. So I'd always kind of been around yoga. And my mom had taken me to my first yoga class when I was 14, asana class. And, you know, I was a gangly 14-year-old girl. I hated it. I thought it was boring and lame and all that stuff. So I hadn't revisited yoga again until my friend was like, I think you should try yoga. I think you're going to really like it because everything you're talking about is yoga philosophy. And that really got me diving into, oh, okay, I'll give this a second look. What is yoga? And started reading online, there wasn't so much online then, but started diving into books. And then I went to a yoga studio, took a class. And after I came out of that class, whatever it was, an hour, 75 minutes, I realized that in that period, I hadn't thought about my life once. Mm. I hadn't thought about my problems or my issues or my concerns. And it was the first time I ever had that true peace of mind. Mm. And so when I came out of that yoga class and I was like, wow, I do yoga now. Mm. And it was literally that fast where that day I was like, this is my life now. And I haven't looked back since. So it was a very kind of fortuitous meeting where my friend was there and gave me that extra little nudge. And sometimes, you know, peer pressure works. Mm-hmm. And my mom, when I did yoga with my mom, maybe I didn't think it was so cool because my mom was doing it. And then my friend told me to do it, and it was amazing. So that's kind of where it started. And then I literally took every class, every workshop, every teacher training I could find. I started doing, since this was kind of before everything was online, correspondence courses. I don't know if you've ever done that.
No.
So a correspondence course, like at these schools, like Ayurveda schools, and some of the yoga courses I did. So it's by snail mail. So literally you send them a check in the mail to register for the course. Then they send you a book and the binder and all the hard printed worksheets and the information, the homework, and you study on your own at home. And then you send back in the mail your handwritten papers and homework. Somebody grades it, sends it back to you. So this process, you can imagine, takes like months and months and months. But I started doing that. Every course I could find, herbalism, Ayurveda, yoga, I was in it. So luckily, I was single. I was young. I could do what I wanted with my time. And yoga was it. That's what I chose to do. So that was kind of how I got into it and haven't looked back since.
That's fantastic. Well, but what kind of yoga? Because you're a vinyasa teacher, right?
But yes, yeah. Primarily, yes.
Yeah. Tell me. I mean, what kind of yoga did you start with?
Vinyasa. Because I was trying so many different styles, and I've done certifications in different styles, but vinyasa has always been what called me to the mat because I love the freedom of the practice. I love the individuality of the practice. I love the flowing, the breath to the movement part of the practice. Mm. And even when I would try other styles, I would enjoy them, and I still do enjoy other styles, but vinyasa was really what connected with my heart. Mm. And so that's what I chose to focus on. And then I also really enjoy restorative yoga. So the calm practice, the practice of stillness and deep relaxation. And so I would say those are primarily the two practices I do the most and that I teach the most. So hard, dynamic, sweaty vinyasa. I like to work really hard when I'm on the mat. And then balancing that out with calm, cool, relaxing.
Mm. That's good. But so you came to Norway. You lived in Trondheim first. Then outside of Oslo, in Eidsvoll.
Correct.
And then you moved to Hemsedal.
Yes.
And you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had Rebecca Luce in my podcast. You know, she comes from abroad. She comes to Norway and she moves to Hemsedal. What's the thing?
I know.
Why do you end up there?
Yeah, well, it's funny. There's another Oslo yoga teacher who lives in Hemsedal too. So there were three of us and she's also not Norwegian. So just an interesting phenomenon, given that Hemsedal has like 2,000 people, I think.
Exactly. Well, some thousand. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a small town.
It's, for me, I ended up there because my husband and I, we met skiing. We love to ski. That's really been a very foundational part of both of our lives individually, but then also together. And when we were moving around Norway, kind of trying to find our landing place, and for me, coming from the U.S., there was a big cultural difference and there was a big shift in my life moving into Norway and trying to find where I belong and trying to find my community and my connections here took me a little bit of time. And when my husband and I were like, well, you know, maybe Trondheim's not exactly the place for us, or maybe Eidsvoll's not really the place for us, we just kept asking each other, well, so where? Mm. Where is our place? Mm. And I actually, funny story, had only been to Hemsedal once before we moved there. It was in the summer, and we spent one night there. And I'm a common theme in my life is that I love to move. I love to try new things. I'm very adventurous in that way. And so when my husband and I were in Eidsvoll, and we were like, okay, this isn't it, and we were just about to have a baby, and then just after we had our baby, I looked at him and I was like, you know what? Hemsedal. Let's move to Hemsedal. It's a ski town. We know the ski culture. We know the ski community, the ski vibe. That's where we want to be, in the mountains, close to nature. And we started looking for houses and we got so lucky because Hemsedal does not have a lot of homes to buy. Mm. And there was a house for sale and we bought it within a month and had moved within a month, like our whole life. And we had a newborn. And it was the middle of COVID and the pandemic. And so I look back now and I'm just like, oh my gosh, we were a little crazy, but it was the right choice for us. And we're so happy there. And Hemsedal's an amazing place to raise children and just to be in the mountains. So yeah, it was very much a whirlwind and also very in line with who my husband and I are. Yeah. So it's kind of funny.
It sounds like you have kind of found your place and, you know, like you tell me, with who you are and who he is, you know, it's like it's important that you both feel that you're in the right place, and especially for you coming from where you are. And yeah, so it's it makes sense. And Hemsedal is a fantastic place. So, you know, I totally get it. I come from a very small ski town near Trondheim. So I was like, have you considered Oppdal? But, you know, it's further away from Oslo. And yeah, anyway, that's not important. But how do you continue with your teachings when you are there?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it is a bit of a struggle and it's a bit of a sacrifice. Mm. I travel a lot for work. I run my teacher trainings in Oslo, Bergen, and Trondheim. Mm. And so I'm working, as you know, most yoga teachers work on the off times when everybody else is off of work. So we work evenings, we work weekends, and my teacher training programs are always on the weekend. Mm. So I work on the weekends, and then I'm home in Hemsedal during the week with my family. So I'm traveling a lot, more than I'd like to, and I'm hoping that I can find a way to sort of shift that in the future. I'm gone anywhere from 4 to 5 days every other week. And so it's a lot for sure. But that's also part of my commitment and my passion to being a yoga teacher and training other people to become yoga teachers is this is what I feel like I'm here to do. This is my dharma. This is my purpose. This is my calling. And so I'm willing to make that sacrifice, at least for a while. I've done this for so long, but now my son's 2.5 and I want to be home more with him. But finding that balance is certainly tricky because being a yoga teacher is kind of a weird job.
It is. And it's really hard to survive, you know, working like a full-time yoga teacher. So I really admire you guys because, you know, I don't do that. I have different jobs. I love teaching. It's really one of the most wonderful things, you know, but at the same time, I've never chose to kind of dedicate myself to only teach. So I really admire that because it's hard work.
It's a lot harder work than people think it is. They see from the outside this very kind of cool, almost glamorous job of like, oh, you just work in your stretchy pants all day and you show up and you're so zen all the time. And the reality is that's not exactly what the job is. There's a lot in the back end that people don't see and a lot of hard work. And to be a full-time yoga teacher, you have to really want it and you have to be willing to make those sacrifices and grind and show up. And I do it because I love it. And this is what I want to be doing. So I do it, but it's hard for sure.
But it's fantastic, you know, that somebody is willing to do that, you know. So let's move over to Ayurveda.
Yes.
Because I know you have said that your life can be divided into two parts. And like you started with before and after Ayurveda came into your life. And, you know, in my introduction, I said Ayurveda is something I have always been interested in learning more about. And when I've been in India, I've been taking some few courses and I went to Ayurvedic doctor because, you know, I had my herniated disc. I was so confused because of my back pains and everything. But, you know, I know so little about it. So, but first start with, you know, before and after it came into your life. Explain.
Sure. Before I found Ayurveda, this was my early 20s. I had graduated from university, had gone on to get more education. And I would categorize this period of my life as pretty painful, actually. I really was struggling with finding my path. And so there were some self-destructive behaviors. There were things that I just was very lost. I didn't have any sense of purpose. I didn't have any direction. And I'm just thinking of like all the late nights, all the parties, all the bad decisions that I made, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to in that time of your life. You're still just figuring things out. And I was skiing and I was working and just doing, I guess what I can say is I have always been searching for freedom. And that was the thing that my soul has always called for, the thing that I just wanted more than anything in my life. And I had always felt like I was being put in these boxes and you have to do things a certain way. You have to get the job. You have to climb the corporate ladder. You have to get married and have the house with the white picket fence. And to me, I really resisted those ideas because they felt so predetermined, like I didn't have a choice in how my life was going to unfold. And so I was really struggling with these deep esoteric ideas of who am I and why am I here? And then when I found Ayurveda and yoga, all of a sudden everything made sense. I had this very concrete philosophy. You know, yoga and Ayurveda are very ancient traditions of wisdom that have textbooks and that have protocols and that have methodologies. And to me, they all very much made sense. And I found with Ayurveda specifically, there are a lot of It encompasses a lot of our daily routines and rituals, how we take care of our body from tongue scraping to self-massage to nausea, rinsing the nose with the neti pot. And so things that are easy to do. Okay, you tell me to use a tongue scraper, I'll use a tongue scraper. Oh, guess what? I feel better. Cool, this works. So very tangible, concrete ways to give myself some sort of anchor in a life that felt very chaotic. And as I continued learning more and incorporating these practices into my life, the most amazing thing happened. Mm. And this was that I found the freedom I was craving. And I was working with somebody at the time, and she in my mid-late 20s, and she was really trying to help me explore the idea of freedom through discipline. And at first, I was like, hold up, discipline's such an ugly word. Mm. I don't want discipline. I want freedom. I want to do what I want to do. And so then I started diving into this concept a bit more, and I found that this is exactly what yoga and Ayurveda teach. When we have good routines, when we go to sleep at the same time every night, when we eat our food at the same time, our body feels good. Our nervous system relaxes. And then all of a sudden, we're able to navigate the ups and downs of our daily life, the challenges of our life, in a way that feels very graceful and very balanced. And so for me, that's why I say my life was very different before Ayurveda and after Ayurveda. Mm. Finding and incorporating these practices into my daily life gave me the thing I was searching for the entire time.
Mm. But so, you know, it might be some listeners now that don't even know what Ayurveda is. So maybe we should just start by explaining. How would you explain if someone asks you, what is Ayurveda?
Yes, it is a holistic healing modality from India originally. And what's very cool about it that a lot of people don't know is that it's actually older than traditional Chinese medicine. It's the oldest medicinal system in the world. Mm. And Ayurveda is based on the rhythms of nature. So it's very holistic in the way that it's organic, it's natural. And the entire idea is that each and every one of us is an individual. And so the system allows us to recognize and honor our individuality. We all have different heights. We have different sizes. We have different digestions. We have different needs in terms of our energy management, in terms of what type of exercise we should be doing even. And so the system really allows us to become our own healer in a way, when we access this information, and we do this through our diet, our routines, our self-care. We can take herbs or supplements, which maybe you got prescribed some from the Ayurvedic doctor you saw in India.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And overall, though, it's a very compassionate way of looking at our health and well-being. And how do we create this wellness that can carry with us throughout our entire life, not just a quick fix or a fad or a diet or the newest exercise craze. It's really about each and every one of us having the ability and capacity to find balance and health. Mm. And Ayurveda, I agree with what you said, where in the beginning you were like, oh, I want to know more about Ayurveda. I've heard about it. And people in the yoga world often say the same thing, like, I've heard of Ayurveda. I want to know more. And then people outside the yoga world are like, Ayur what?
Yeah, exactly.
What is this weird hippie thing you're talking about? Mm. But it's not a weird hippie thing. It's not a woo-woo thing. It's actually medical science. Mm. And when people study Ayurveda, you can go all the way up to actually becoming an Ayurvedic surgeon. So Ayurvedic doctors have exactly the same amount of schooling as allopathic or Western doctors do. So it encompasses everything that Western medicine does. It just takes a more global approach to looking at our health. So, for example, and I also want to say that I'm a huge supporter and proponent of Western medicine as well. I think that there's a time and a place for both Western medicine and then this more holistic Eastern approach to health. But it's this idea. Oh, now I forgot where I was going.
Oh,
the holistic approach.
Oh, me too. Because my next question was actually, you know, how is Ayurveda compared to
What people think about it being this weird hippie thing. They want to know. Oh, I know where we are.
Okay.
And so, like you were saying earlier, that you want to know more about Ayurveda. And this is the feedback I hear from a lot of people too, is that they're curious. And whether you're familiar, you've heard it before or not, I think all of us are searching for ways to enhance our life and to make our life feel a bit more easy and a bit more healthy and a bit more grounded. And so that's really why I wrote my book, is so that it's kind of this, it's designed to be this introduction, a guide to how can we, as people who maybe don't know much about Ayurveda, start to learn the basic concepts and then start to integrate them into our daily life. And so that's one of the things that I'm super passionate about, is Ayurveda is for everybody. It's not just for the yoga people in India. It's not just for the people who are really dedicated and rigid in their routines. It's for the modern human who has bills to pay and has children to take care of and has a job to go to. And that's what this practice is all about, is how does it support, or how can it support our life in the way that our life already looks. Mm.
But can you do, I mean, how is Ayurveda related to yoga? Is it like a relationship, or can you kind of practice Ayurveda without doing yoga?
Yes. So there is a relationship, and you can practice it without doing yoga.
Yeah.
So Ayurveda is every area of our life. So it can be, and it's actually called the Sanskrit word Ayurveda, actually gets translated into the knowledge of life. So it's everything, which can seem really overwhelming at first, but it breaks down to, it can be applied to, as I said before, our diet, our routines, our sleep, but it also can be applied to our relationships, both with ourselves and other people. It can be applied to our work life, like when are we most productive in our work? When are we most creative in our work? It can be applied to our sexuality. It's really fun. This might be a topic for another time, but I used Ayurveda. I did an 8-month conscious conception journey before I got pregnant. So I used Ayurveda before getting pregnant. I used Ayurveda during my pregnancy. I used Ayurveda in the postpartum period. So Ayurveda really is part of everything. Mm. And yoga, on the other hand, I mean, we could also argue yoga is part of everything, yoga off the mat, the yoga of our life. But in a more traditional interpretation, I think we could say that yoga is more of the, is more about the asana, the movement. It's about the pranayama, the breath work, ultimately leading us to the meditation. That's the main goal of yoga, according to the 8 limbs. And when we meditate, it is about finding that deeper connection with self. And Ayurveda would say that's also the ultimate goal, but Ayurveda is also, it's a lifestyle science, where yoga, I think, is a more specific practice. But they are related, because Ayurveda is also called the sister science of yoga. And so if you're practicing a full Ayurvedic lifestyle, you would also be doing yoga, the poses, the breath work, the meditation. But you could also, you could be just practicing parts of the Ayurvedic lifestyle in terms of the rituals and routines and diet without maybe doing the yoga.
Mm. Wow. It's a big field to dive into.
Huge.
But so many years ago, when I first started touching into Ayurveda, this was in the UK. I did my first teacher training in 2005. And I remember we had this forms to fill out, you know, and they check, you know, what kind of type you are. So that's kind of, and that's also what you just said, you know, it's individual, and it kind of sees what kind of person you are. So can you explain, because people are divided into 3 different types in Ayurveda. And explain.
Yeah, I'll give the very quick brief overview of the 3 types of people. And I also want to say that each and every one of us has all 3 within us, all 3 types. However, they're in varying degrees. So somebody might have more of the first one and less of the next two. Somebody might have more of the middle one and less of the other two. But we do want to recognize that we have all 3. And it's always really fun because people start to see themselves right away, like, oh, that's the type I am, or that's the type I am. And this is also where it comes into interpersonal relationships, because then we can be like, oh, that's my partner, that's what they're like, or that's my child, that's what they're like, or that's my boss, that's what they're like. Mm. So it's more information, that's all. Mm. So the first type is called Vata dosha. And this is the air and ether energy, which is very light. It's very variable, meaning it's moving all over the place. So somebody who has a lot of Vata energy is going to be very enthusiastic. They're going to be very energetic. They're going to be moving around a lot, probably, both in their body, but also maybe in their life, like literally moving locations, houses, apartments, towns, countries. And they are in balance. They are very creative. They love art, music, anything that's a little bit outside the box. They're very good at that. And they're very intuitive as well. When they're out of balance, though, Vata people are going to be a bit unstable, a bit chaotic, a bit disorganized, very unreliable and unpredictable. Mm. And so people who have a Vata energy primarily, their main goal is to focus on grounding. Can they slow down? They have to stay warm. They have to eat nourishing food, drink warm beverages, and really take care of their energy, because Vata people are the ones who kind of use the most energy in their daily life. And so in order to balance out that use of energy, that external distribution of energy, they have to then really work hard to ground down so that they don't spin out into that very chaotic, unbalanced state. And then we have the Pitta person. And so this is a combination of the fire and water elements. And Pitta is all about the fire. This is the person who is very motivated and ambitious and organized. And they like things to be a certain way. They're very goal-oriented. They like to see that they can get results based on some protocol. So when they are out of balance, though, they are going to be perhaps angry, irrational. They're going to have really explosive emotions. And Pitta people, because they're so analytical and they're so good at thinking and being critical thinkers, that when they're out of balance, that's going to lead them to be very black and white in their thinking. Like there's a right way and there's a wrong way. And that can be too rigid. That can be too unforgiving. So Pitta people need to work on, we like to say, like getting out of the head and into the heart. And Pitta people need to focus on finding like a sense of playfulness in their life, something that's fun just for the sake of being fun. Like not everything in our life has to have a goal or a destination or an outcome. It can just be enjoyable for that sake. And then, of course, cooling down. So making sure they're not eating too spicy foods and making sure that they're really giving themselves time to rest. Different rest than Vata, but still time to rest and not be so workaholic in their tendencies. And then we get to the third type, which is the Kapha. And this is a combination of the earth and water elements. And Kapha people are slow and steady. They are sweet. They are kind. They're very much considered kind of like the glue or the rock in their relationships, both in their family and in their friend group. They're very reliable and you can count on them. They say what they're going to do, or they do what they say they're going to do. And they are very much motivated by creature comforts. So they like their home. They like animals. They like food. Food's a big part of Kapha. And they're very much just like, you know, go with the flow. Like that's the water element. Just kind of go with the flow. Okay, not really rocking the boat too much. And when they're out of balance, though, then that earth element becomes so heavy that there's really this weight and this stagnancy, and they're very, that slow and steady quality becomes too heavy, and it prevents them from actually doing things in their life. So they lose motivation. They are probably more likely to just be shut in at home, binge eating food, binge eating TV, oversleeping. These things that are very, you know, in yoga we could say tamasic, but very just heavy. Mm. And so what Kapha's need to do when they experience that is they need to get moving. Like Kapha people need to go to the gym, lift the weights, go for a run, go for a bike, go skiing, although it's kind of counterintuitive to their nature, but once they get going, they have very good stamina. So they'll just keep going and going and going. And kapas should be eating the spicy food. They should be really varying their routines and trying to get out of that rut that they're in if they're out of balance. Mm. So those are the three general types. Again, very brief overview, but I think people can probably start to see a little bit of themselves in one of these.
Well, I can see myself in all of them. So how do you find out what kind of type you are? Because you said you always have like combination. But how do you do this? Like I said, I got a form many years ago. I just remember and I was like, oh, am I like this? Or, you know, and I remember getting a little bit like unsure. So I was like, oh, maybe someone else should help me to tick the boxes. So how can you find out? Do you have to go to like a Ayurvedic consultant or can you do it yourself?
There's a few ways. So the form that you're talking about is very common. That's used. I use a form in my teacher training programs. And that's kind of the best closest way we can get to finding out our dosha without going to a consultant or an Ayurvedic doctor. When you go to an Ayurvedic doctor, I mean, that's the best. They have the experience. They have the ability to really see what's happening in your body. And not all of us are going to be able to do that, especially in Norway, where there's a very, very limited number of people who offer that service. And so then the best way, or I guess the most accessible way, I'll say that most people probably try to find their dosha is an online quiz. Mm-hmm. And that's hard because some of the quizzes are really good and some of them are very basic. So it's hard to know exactly if what kind of an answer you're getting, if the answer is correct. And also, when we take these quizzes or tests, we want to take them and answer them from the perspective as though we'd been healthy for a very long time. So we're not trying to understand our imbalances. And if we answer that question or the online quiz like, okay, today I'm feeling, you know, tired because I didn't sleep well and I ate sugar last night or whatever the case is. If we answer the quiz coming at it from like, here's how I feel right now, we're not going to get the correct answer. It's going to be skewed. Mm. So we want to answer the questions as though we've been healthy a long time. And that's going to give us what we call our prakriti, or that's our baseline doshic composition. So online quizzes or forms, if we have access to those, or an Ayurvedic consultant or an Ayurvedic doctor. So I know it's not the answer maybe everybody wants to hear. Like, we all just want to be told, tell me what I am.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But usually we have to go to somebody who has the experience to read.
But so let's move over to your book because, you know, say something about that. You know, it's a book about Ayurveda. It's a book about how we can learn to live more Ayurvedic lifestyle. But do you have a form in that book where you can start with to find out what dosha you are?
Yeah, I actually have an online quiz. So in my book is a QR code that goes to that quiz, but I'm also publishing the quiz link on Instagram, and I'm going to be putting it on my main yoga school website, atmanyogaschool.com, so that people can access this whenever they want. And in the book, yeah, we go really much more into depth, into describing the three doshas and just giving more information about how we can start to see ourselves, and most importantly, how we can start to use this information in our life. And Ayurveda has very specific guidelines on how, once we know what our dosha is, it's like, okay, great, I know my dosha, now what? So Ayurveda gives us the guidelines to then use that information to help us create balance in our life. And it's very much also based on the changing of the seasons, the energy of the day, and the energy and seasons of our life, where we have different needs when we're 20 than we do when we're 50. And we have different needs at 10 in the morning versus 10 at night. And we have different needs in the spring than we do in the fall. Mm. And so Ayurveda explains all of this. And it's a very beautiful, intuitive way for us to kind of take control of our health in ways that are very easy. you know, for example, like what time you should eat breakfast, what should you eat for breakfast, how do you take care of your body, and also starting to notice your energy, which I think most people struggle with. You talk to somebody on the street or your friend, and you're like, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good. I'm just really tired. I'm really busy. Like, that's the general answer that you're probably going to get. And so Ayurveda really believes in this idea of longevity in health and also vibrancy in health. Can we be radiant when we take care of ourselves and take care of our energy? And so my book covers a lot of this. And I mentioned this before, but I'd like to reiterate it, just that my book is really designed to be for everybody. It's not just the yoga people, and has very specific tips, very specific actions that everybody can start to take today when you start reading my book, and information that I hope will make your life better.
Yeah.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
But, you know, you talk about these three different types, the doshas, you know, persons, personalities, or how you would say it. And if we relate it to yoga, should the different doshas, I'm not even sure if I spell it correct, should you practice different type of yoga when you're like, because, you know, I've always been practicing Ashtanga. And if I realize that I have a dosha that maybe requires that I should only do yin, what do I do? I mean, do you understand what I
do? I do. Yeah. Absolutely. And I do talk about this in my book, because it's a great question and a lot of people wonder. And it's very interesting for you and I as teachers, when we start to understand this information, to see the students who come to our classes. So in general, the rule in Ayurveda is we always balance through the use of opposites. So if we experience too much of the vata energy and we're feeling really ungrounded, then we have to slow down and ground. If we're experiencing pitta energy and it's just like we're really fired up and we're really aggressive and we're really like, you know, go, 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 then we need to like slow down, but also finds a sense of coolness in our body so that fire is not so hot. And then kapas in general, you know, when they're feeling this like lethargy and they're unmotivated and they don't really want to go do anything, like they have to find a way to get going and get motivated. So how this applies to the yoga practice is so fun, because we see primarily in the styles of yoga that you and I teach, Ashtanga and Power Vinyasa, that the people who come to these classes are going to be pitta and also vata. And pitta, that's fine. Like they are attracted to the form and the fact that they feel like they're getting a workout and they're sweating and they're moving their body and they're building muscle. And the vatas, it's fine for them too, except they get tired so much more easily and so much quicker. And so really, and then the kapas, the joke is kapas are the ones who should be going to Ashtanga or Power Vinyasa, but they don't. So kapas tend to gravitate to a yin practice, which is slow, grounding. There's no real effort required. And so we can see just in general, so vatas go to the class that's that's maybe not the most optimal to them. They're working too hard. They're using too much energy. They're getting too tired. And then they push beyond their limit, energetically speaking. And then the pittas are going to the hard practice, and they're just stoking that fire element, which is just going to aggravate them more. And then the kapas are too slow. So they're going to the practices that are perhaps less optimal for them. So if we were in an ideal world to say which dosha should practice which style of yoga, vata people should be practicing the yin, the restorative yoga, really nourishing their nervous system. Pitta people should be practicing what we might call like a slow flow. So something that still they're moving and it feels good, but it's not so goal-oriented. It's not so dynamic. And so it's a bit cooler. And also hopefully there'd be like some playful elements in the class. So maybe there's some arm balances, but without a goal attached to the outcome of the arm balance. And then kapas, like I said, they should be going to Ashtanga, they should be going to Power Vinyasa, and they should be going hard. So it's this question of when we start to learn this information, how willing are we to make choices or changes in our lifestyle in order to create balance and a sense of well-being and happiness? Mm-hmm. And on some days, maybe we're motivated. We're like, yes, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to eat well. I'm going to get enough sleep. I'm going to drink enough water. And then other days we're like, we just throw our hands up and we're like, you know what? Today's not that day. I'm really stressed. Something's going on with my kid. I'm sick, whatever. And so this is the beauty of Ayurveda. And I think this relates back to the question, which is why I'm talking about it, which is we really want to leave room for self-forgiveness and grace and compassion. And that's what I think Ayurveda offers us, is we're striving to do better. We're striving to have more happiness and health in our life, but we also, we're human. Mm. And so if we love a practice like I do and like you do, and I'll use myself as the example. You know, when I was younger, I would have two daily practices every day for years, and I loved it. And it was, for me, really exciting and fun, and it felt good. But I'm also a pretty extreme vata person. So if I wasn't doing anything else to balance it, I would have probably gotten burnt out much quicker. So because I was doing all of my other practices to supplement my choice of doing power vinyasa, I wasn't as out of balance as I might have been. So the takeaway is that we can still choose to do things that are maybe less optimal for our dosha, as long as we're trying to do other things to make up for it in other areas of our life. So I think that's what's really cool, is that it's not just this, there's only one way to do it. There's many ways to do it. And our needs are going to fluctuate and change. And as long as we're aware of our choices and what's motivating our choices, the intention behind our choices, I think we're going to be fine. Mm.
But can the doshas change throughout the life? Or are, if you are that kind of person, you will stay that for the rest of your life? How is that?
In general, you'll stay that way the rest of your life because our dosha that we're born with, our dosha composition that we're born with, it's really like our DNA. It can't really change except under, you know, very specific long-term chronic conditions. This is where, on a happy note, we know meditation, if you have a prolonged meditation practice, you actually change your DNA structure. So it's the same thing with Ayurveda, or I guess I should say lifestyle. If you have a really detrimental lifestyle practice for a long period of time, then you might change what your doshas are. But for most of us, it's not going to change. Mm. But what changes is our imbalances. So the imbalances are what fluctuate up and down, and they can change. They can be short. They can be temporary. Oh, I got a cold. Oh, I have the flu. Oh, I have a seasonal allergy. Or the imbalance can be very long-standing and much more serious, such as autoimmune disease, cancer, diabetes. And so that's what's going to change based on the, or I guess the dosha of that imbalance would change. But our baseline is not going to change. Mm. Okay. Does that make sense? Or I can explain it a little bit further. I'm just trying to keep it very simple.
Yeah, no, it's it makes sense. It's just, you know, so if you do the job and find your dosha, you know that that's kind of your DNA. That's how you are. It's not like in 2 years, because you do this and this, then it's going to change. And now you're more like a pitta person, or, you know, so it's kind of, because that's also good to know that then you can deepen your practices according to what's good for that kind of person, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'll use right now as an example, because we're in the springtime. This is the Kapha time of year. So what that means is the Kapha energy is the strongest. So many people are going to start to experience maybe a little bit of heaviness, or maybe there's some extra weight from the winter, and just kind of, even though the sun is out and we feel good, it's still like this, we're slow to get motivated. We're slow to get back into a new routine after the long winter of hibernation and being inside and being cozy. And so this energy, we really, like a lot of imbalances that come from Kapha would be seasonal allergies. So when the pollen starts to come off the trees and the flowers bloom, very common. A lot of people have seasonal allergies. So that's not, that's the imbalance, the allergy. That's not changing what their underlying dosha is. So that's the difference. And then when we move out of the spring and we get into the summer and the seasonal allergy goes away, that imbalance has been kind of stopped. But their main dosha still is the same. So that doesn't change.
Good. You write in your book, and you touched upon it earlier, but you say that you found freedom through discipline. And discipline is something I keep coming back to in my yoga journey. And I also had an episode with Ellen Johansson where we talked about discipline and dedication, because I think discipline is a very is a word you have a lot of negative association with, but at the same time, you know, discipline has been so fantastic and so needed for me personally in my yoga journey. But can you explain a little bit deeper what you mean by that?
Yeah, it's exactly what you're talking about, where at first we think the word discipline is really off-putting, and it feels very like it's boxing you in, like you're losing your choices when you have discipline. But we know from the yoga tradition that the tapas, or the passion for the practice, the discipline, the ability to show up when you want to, which is easy, but then also to show up when you don't want to, which is hard, I think is what shapes us and allows our character to develop and allows us to stay committed to something long enough to see the benefits of it. So many of us, especially now in the modern world, we just want a quick fix. We want somebody to tell us the answer. We want somebody to give us the pill. We just want to have it magically be perfect without putting any work or any effort in. And this is only setting us up for not only failure, but actually ultimately suffering, because we have this expectation that's never going to be met. And we are required to take action in our life in order to find that space of peace that we all crave inside. And so discipline, I love discipline. I think it's an amazing topic, not only to talk about, but also to observe in our own lives, where we're able to hold the line with keeping ourselves accountable, accountability, a huge part of it, but then also where perhaps it is necessary to step away from the rigidity of the discipline. And that line is always moving in our life. As I said a little earlier, some days we can show up and it's easy, and other days we show up and it's hard. But I think in relationship to Ayurveda specifically, so not even yoga, but just Ayurveda, there is always a way to have discipline in the practice of Ayurveda, in the lifestyle practices of Ayurveda, even as our needs shift and change. And for me, that's been really fundamental. Like for you, as you said, having that discipline in your life was really important for you and for me also. And so I'd like to give an example where, and I think probably a lot of people can relate to this, and maybe you too, Vibeka, at certain times in your life where I started my journey with yoga and Ayurveda, and I was so like excited and motivated. Like it was easy to be motivated because everything was new and just so exciting. And then it just sort of shifted into that's who I was and that's what I did. Like there was no question about it. And I found that as I've had periods of like challenge in my life, that parts of my practice I've had to temporarily release or let go of, but I was still able to keep some parts of the practice. And for me, that was the discipline. So for example, I don't know if you know, but I'm pretty open about it. Right before I moved, a week before I was supposed to move to Norway, I got diagnosed with a very rare and aggressive form of cancer.
Ooh, no, I didn't.
And my soft tissue cancer in my wrist. And completely changed all my plans. Like, I was literally about to get on the plane to move here and ended up staying in the States for several more months. I moved into a cancer house, got my treatment in Salt Lake City. So I was away from my husband. I was away from work, everything. And, you know, a very difficult time, but also for me, a very profound spiritual time. And I couldn't do my yoga practice. I couldn't – there was a lot of things that were outside my control. And so what I could fall back on still to maintain that discipline or even that thread of connection to my practice were my Ayurvedic dinacharya or self-care routines and rituals. And so I still had a daily practice. It just looked a little bit maybe less robust than my daily practice before or after this experience. Mm. And so I share this because I think, again, this can offer all of us some hope in our life that our practice doesn't have to look the same every single day, but we have to have a practice every single day. Mm. And that's at least my viewpoint on it and discipline and what that means to me. And if there's no connection to anything, if we have no discipline, we're going to be so disconnected and we're not going to have any sense of stability in our life. And so I think discipline's very important.
Yeah, and I want to, and thank you for sharing that story. I had no idea about that. So and I know cancer can be really tough to go through. So, but I can relate, and I want to tell, because when I had my herniated disc, I kind of lost everything for some weeks, maybe a month. I was more or less in bed because I couldn't move. I was so much in pain. And I got sick at the same time because my immune system was down. You know, everything was down. So anyway, but when I got better and I kept practicing. And of course, I didn't do an Ashtanga practice. But at that time, I went to a studio. It took me like 25, 30 minutes to drive from my house to the studio. And I drove every morning. I went to the studio, so the same studio as I used to before the herniated disc. Well, it was there for a long time, but, you know, when it hits, kind of, yeah. And I went there and I did a different kind of practice. I was just sitting. So I was kind of meditating. I was breathing. I was crying a lot. I was lying in Shavasana in different variation because, you know, I couldn't really lie flat on my back. But anyway, I kept a routine. I kept like a discipline routine. And I think that saved me in that period of my life because it was so hard for me. It was like mentally and, you know, also being stopped from your physical practice, which I'm very dependent on, you know, because I've been doing this for so many years and I love it. So it's like, and it's my way of exercise. I'm so glad that you're saying this because, you know, I think it's so important for people who experience different struggles in life. If you have routines, if you have that discipline to something and you keep going, you can change it, but still keep going. I think it's like a life anchor, or how do you say it? So it's I just wanted to relate to it. So, but and let's move on to, because if you're not able to do like the physical practices, like we talk about, like asanas or yoga or the because self-care is a large part of Ayurvedic approach. And I know, and I will, how do you say? I lose my words here now. You know, I'm going to tell people to read this book because, you know, I guess there is a lot of tips there. But can you say some tips for self-care, like in the Ayurvedic approach?
Yeah, I can share my top three favorite tips if you'd like.
Yeah.
So the first one I've already kind of talked about a little bit, but I can explain it more. And this is tongue scraping. So this is it changes your life. You use either a copper or stainless steel tongue scraper, and it's like this U-shaped little metal device. And you can find them everywhere. You can buy them online. They're very cheap. And first thing in the morning when you wake up, before you brush your teeth, before you drink anything, before you eat food, you stand over your sink in the bathroom and gently scrape from the back of your tongue forward. And a lot of people don't know that the tongue is the largest one of the largest detoxification organs in the body. And so overnight when we're sleeping, there's kind of this film or this coating that comes up onto the surface of the tongue. So in the morning, when we remove that, we're just kind of helping our body with the detoxification process. Versus if we don't do that and we go and we drink our coffee and we have our breakfast, we're just kind of like reabsorbing that toxic matter back into the digestive tract. And once you start doing this, you notice a huge difference. I was talking with somebody yesterday and she said, as soon as she started doing tongue scraping, she hasn't been sick since. It's been 2 years for her.
Wow.
And, you know, of course, that could be a variety of factors, but it's just one way that we help our body clean itself is using a tongue scraper. It's super easy, takes 30 seconds, if even that, in the morning. Then I would say my second favorite way to take care of the body is dry brushing. Dry brushing?
Dry brushing.
Yeah. Have you done that before?
Yeah, I think so many years ago.
Yeah.
I think I lost all these routines or these, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah, which happens, you know. You have to kind of be, you have to have them out on your sink. You have to see them. I think it's easy to forget if you don't have them around you. But a dry brush is just, and you can buy these in Norway. They're in many, many stores, many places. It's a brush smaller than a hairbrush, and the bristles are a little bit firmer. And you do dry brushing. So you stand in your bathroom naked, and you just do gentle strokes with this dry brush on your skin. And you start at the feet. You work your way up towards the heart. And on the flat bones, like the shin or the arm, you do these short strokes upward. And then around the joints, you do a circular motion. And we do this for several reasons. It's stimulating the circulation of the body, which is really great. It's helping to drain the lymphatic system. It's exfoliating the skin, so brushing off all the dry and rough skin that we have. It helps to prevent cellulite. And it's preparing the skin for the next step, which is my third favorite Ayurvedic tip. Well, these aren't in any order. It's number three, but they're all the same. They're all my favorite. For the third tip, and this is Abhyanga or an oil massage, self-massage that you give yourself. And this is probably this and tongue scraping for sure are what have saved me during these difficult, challenging periods of my life. And they're non-negotiable. I do these every single day, and I have for 16 years. And so what we do with the Abhyanga or the massage is you can warm up the oil, use like sesame seed oil. And so we want cold-pressed, unrefined, organic. So this is not the toasted sesame that you would cook with in your kitchen. Mm. And if you don't have access to sesame seed oil, then you can use like olive oil. You can use for some pitta people, they could use coconut oil, but vata people should not use coconut oil. So there's different types of oil you can use. And you either warm it up, just put it, warm up a pan of water and then put the bottle of oil in it, or pour out a little bit of oil, put it in like a coffee mug, and then put the coffee mug in the pan of warm water. Or if you don't want to warm it, it's ideal to warm it. But if you don't, that's okay. Just have it in your bathroom. After you dry brush, you just squirt a little bit into your hand. And same thing, you're working, massaging the oil into your body from the feet up towards the heart. And you can use these, that same like short stroke motions on the long bones, and then circular motion on the joints, the elbows, the knees, the hips, the belly. And this is so awesome. It is so nourishing for the nervous system. And for many people who experience just stress and anxiety, this is one of the best holistic ways to immediately kind of calm your energy and lower the shoulders and just be like, okay.
Wow.
And it's amazing. It's fantastic. And it also is very moisturizing for the body. And this is important because for us living in Norway, we live in a naturally Vata climate. So it's cold, it's dark, it's windy, it's dry. So that means the vata energy is already very high here. And so we have to work, according to Ayurveda, we have to work extra hard. Anybody, not just vata people, but every person in Norway should be working hard to balance that vata energy by grounding, slowing down, moisturizing. And so Abhyanga is a great way to accomplish that and keep the skin healthy and beautiful and just feeling good. And so this massage you can do either before you shower, and then it's great. You just hop in the shower, the water just rinses the oil off. You don't need to soap. You just can soap, as we say, the important parts.
Okay.
And then you put your clothes on. You pat dry and put your clothes on afterwards. Mm-hmm. And you could do this either at night or in the morning, depending on when you like to shower or how you're preparing for your day and your routine. But those are my top three tips. They're awesome. Everybody should do them.
It sounds amazing. And I must admit, I have used the tongue scrape for periods of time. I have, when you touch far back on your tongue,
yes,
I have a tendency to start like I want to vomit. And I think that's one of the reasons why I do something wrong? Or
you probably went too far back on the tongue.
Okay.
You don't need to go as far back.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try again. I know I have it in one of my drawers. But so if you start implementing just few of those tips, you think that you will feel better.
I 100% believe that you will feel better.
And I guess there are a lot of more tips in the books, in your book, sorry.
Yeah, there are. And these are just my favorite self-care tips. Mm. I have lots of information about diet and food in my book, and sleep tips, energy management tips, like how do we have boundaries around our energy and how do we become more aware of how we use our energy. Mm. And I think that's what's so awesome about yoga and Ayurveda is it teaches us how to become more aware of our life in general and to have this mirror or this reflection point of what are my habits, thoughts, and behaviors? And am I on autopilot? Am I checked out of my own life? Or can I be really present and really intentional in how I navigate my day-to-day? So that's what I think is one of the gifts of Ayurveda also is, you're using a tongue scraper. Like that feels good. It makes your body feel good and function more optimally. But also it's about that intention of being present with the discipline and the practice that you do every day. Mm. So there's a lot of connections there, I think.
Mm. Can we just briefly, because, you know, it's always a big question for most people, I would also say, especially maybe in the yoga world, you know, what does Ayurveda say about diet? I know it's a big topic, but can you just say something briefly?
Yes. I mean, it is a huge topic. Mm. Is there a more specific question about diet or a part you want to know about? Or,
well, I guess, again, it's also about what kind of dosha you are, you know, what kind of person you are. Because you, like you say, for some, was it vata, you should eat a lot of hot food? Or was it, I need to study the details here. But so it's maybe a little bit hard to give some tips about, you know, what Ayurveda says about diet.
Yeah, I'll give some really quick tips for each of the three doshas. And Ayurveda also has a pretty beautiful, I would say, a list of kind of recommendations of how to eat Ayurvedically. So regardless of your dosha, regardless of what food you're actually eating, the way in which we eat is almost just as important, probably maybe even more important than what we actually eat. Mm. And so maybe I should talk about that. Maybe that's more interesting.
Yeah, I think maybe food and Ayurveda might be an episode of its own.
It's a very in-depth topic, which is amazing. And I think there are some takeaways. So I'll pick out like some of my favorite teachings from Ayurveda about diet. The first one that I love is the first rule. And this is that we want to eat food that's made with love, prepared with love. It says love is the most important ingredient. And you can really taste food that was made with love versus going to a fast food restaurant. It's just like they're slinging the burgers and they're just like, hurry, hurry, hurry. And part of this is Ayurveda says that we actually, the food that we eat isn't just about the actual nutrition, the carbohydrates and the sugar and the fat. It's actually about the energy of the food as well. And so whatever the energy of the food has, that's what we're ingesting as well. And so when we eat, ideally, we would be sitting at a table that's clean, that's clear, that's calm. So we don't have like our piles of work and our laptops, which I know for many of us is very common. But we want to take the effort to clean the table. I mean, we could even say saucha from the yoga tradition and the eight limbs. And take our time to set a beautiful table. Mm. So use your nice china. Like, don't keep it hidden in the hutch. Like, take it out. Put fresh flowers on the table. Light the candle. And then you sit down with your loved ones, or if you're by yourself, that's fine too. But we want to do it intentionally. So turn the TV off. Turn the radio off. Put your phone away. Stop scrolling. Maybe you have some nice, pleasant music in the background. But in general, we don't want to be distracted when we eat. And then you really pay attention to your food. So looking at the food, saying thank you to the food, ingesting and enjoying this beautiful meal that's nourishing your body. And maybe we're sitting with friends or family and we can have pleasant conversation and talking about nice things versus Ayurveda would say it would be less optimal. We never say bad. We just say less optimal to sit down and have your meal and be, say, fighting with your spouse. Or being angry. You get a work email and you're, you know, upset at your boss and you're just like fuming. You're like in your mind planning the email you're going to send back and you're, you know, shoveling your brush even into your mouth at the same time. Ayurveda would say that's less optimal. Mm. Like if you're upset or if you're distracted, actually you should wait a little bit to eat because the energy that you're feeling in that moment, your food will also absorb and then bring back into your body. So really trying to set aside time for your meals to be pleasant and enjoyable. And here's the trade-off. We're modern yogis. We're householders. Like, we're busy. We have, you know, football practice for the kids. We have to go do all these errands. Like, so we do the best we can. Mm. That's the takeaway with this. Like, Ayurveda teaches us what would be most optimal. Mm. But then we understand that it's not going to look like that every single day. So preparing food with love, eating in a clean, calm, beautiful environment. And then, of course, eating fresh food that's local, organic, and in season. Mm. But that one can sometimes be tricky.
Optimal.
Optimal, yeah. Yes.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So, I am very curious to hear or learn more about this. I can't wait to hold your book in my hands. And you know, I wanted to ask, like, if people now are interested in learning more, I mean, where should they start? Where to turn? I mean, obviously your book. This is a good promotion for the book, but where else can people find information and learn about Ayurveda?
My favorite resource is a website from the US called BanyanBotanicals.com. And I'm not sponsored by them. I wish I was, but I'm not. And unfortunately, they don't ship to Norway, which is also so sad. They sell a lot of Ayurvedic products, oils, herbs, supplements, but they also have a huge resource platform. So you can go into their website. You can read all about the doshas. They have a dosha quiz, lots of amazing information. So that's probably my go-to reference that I recommend to people. And of course, there's tons of great books. Dr. David Frawley, one of my very favorite authors and teachers on Ayurveda. I think he's written like 24 books or something. So I would say those are probably good places to start.
Great. And we're going to write it. I'm going to write it in the description of this episode. So if people are curious, they will find it there. So when is your book coming?
Well, it just had the pre-sale start on Monday, and the book comes out, launches officially May 8th. So people can buy the book right now, pre-order, pre-sales, and I have lots of good bonuses that they get with that. I'm giving away some Ayurvedic self-care bundles. I've got an amazing super bonus digital download, lots of cool stuff. And then the book comes out May 8th, and so then it'll be just in bookstores and yoga studios and in a lot of places.
Fantastic. So let's end with my always question, my regular question, how do you say? What is your best tip, your life advice, anything that we can take away from this conversation?
I think this conversation, and just if I had to sum up what my life advice would be just in general, is practice kindness. I think each and every one of us can be more kind to ourselves, be more kind to others, and look for ways to be more kind in general. I think that will make our world a better place. Mm-hmm. And that's how I try to live my life. And if more people are on board with that, then I think we can change the world. Mm. So practice kindness.
Thank you. And thank you for your kindness to come here and to share. I mean, I could have talked with you for hours because, you know, I personally think this is so interesting, and I can't wait to dive into this topic, really. So thank you so much, Jessica. And by the way, we have to mention you also have a podcast. It's called
One Sacred Pause. Yeah.
Lovely. I found your podcast yesterday. I don't know where I've been because I haven't heard about it before, but I'm really looking forward to dive into a lot of the episodes.
Yeah.
So let's promote that as well at the end.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Vivica. This is so fun, so cool. And I'm so passionate about sharing this information because it's changed my life, and I know that it can change other people's lives. And it's just such a pleasure to be able to be here and talk about it. And thank you for the shout out to my podcast too. Mm. It's definitely flies under the radar quite a bit, and that's fine. It's great. But and then I just like to share one thing too about where you can find my book link if you want to pre-order, or once it goes on sale and the launch after May. It's at my publisher, Noor Publishing, Noor Agency. You can find it on their website. And also on my Instagram, I have the link in my bio, Jessica Winderl.
Yeah. And I will put everything out on the description and wherever I promote this episode. So, and if not, people can always contact me or you, and they will find the information. Okay. Thank you so much. And tusen takk for at du hørte på gjenhør.